welcome to a special San Diego Comic-Con interview with the cast of Alphas. We were lucky enough to get a chance to talk to David Strathairn, I'm totally saying his name wrong, who plays Dr. Lee Rosen. Also, I got to talk to executive producers Zach Penn and Ira Bear. And I hope you guys enjoy it. Talk to you next time.
What are you enjoying the most about the office world?
The office world, learning all about brain neurology and the neurological, what?
I said, that's the fun part?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
You got really high cultivated taste.
Well, we should all be interested in our brains, you know, that's...
That's what I've been doing wrong.
I have a more basic question. Is your character a good guy or a bad guy?
That's up to the audience. I can't play good or bad. I just got to play what's on the table. And that's one of the exciting things about the show is that it's a complex, it's kind of a teeter-totter.
I think that's one of the more interesting things about your character, because I'm not sure.
Yeah.
I've only seen two episodes, obviously.
Good. Yeah, it's.
I have no idea where your character is. I don't know whether to trust your character or not at all.
Is that what drew you to the character?
Was that what you meant
that
to do?
What?
Was that what drew you to playing the character?
To be mistrusted? No.
But, no, but...
Being mysterious. No,
the fact that he was...
Well, no, just because he was in a rock and a hard place to caring for these people and then reluctantly associated with a department of the government that was doing investigation, essentially law enforcement. That's not something a scientist necessarily envisions for himself when he starts doing research on, you know, brain function. So it's an interesting, sort of dramatic place to be.
When you read the script, was the character different as it evolved? Has it evolved from where you first read it and what you
No, they're holding on to the characters, sort of the original vision, the structure. You know, of course, you're going to start building on that structure, and there may be, you know, additions, renovations, whatever. But they're holding on to what they so far, you know. But each week, each new story, each new event presents another facet to him, which is sort of coming in the back door of his what he was and what he. Before the story began, and what he may become.
But is your portrayal, your performance as the character, is it influencing and changing it that way at all?
Yeah, most of our characters are developing in a sort of collaborative way with the writers. They see how our characters are starting to evolve, and they can write to that, as well as we feel things growing in the relationships that we say, well, how about flagging that and developing that a little more? So it's a very collaborative kind of process.
One of the things I always dislike in TV shows is when somebody who is like studying something like that comes to find out that he is one himself. Is Dr. Rosen actually going to end up being an alpha, or is he going to...
I don't know. I don't know. I haven't seen any hints of that yet, but it's possible.
Okay. That's why he's interested in studying it, maybe, because he's perceived some of that in himself.
If someone asked me the other day, does an alpha... is an alpha born, or can you make an alpha? And so far as the show is has developed, the answer is like, no, you are born that way.
Okay.
Yeah. So I guess they'll have to check out Rosen's birth certificate. You know,
Do you think does Dr. Rosen actually view them as kind of patients or people he's caring for and helping them cultivate their skills, or does he view them as kind of more of his extended family?
It's a good question on both. Because, often a scientist goes at a subject matter in a very clinical way. And now that he's involved with these people, they aren't just under a microscope. They're now, flesh and blood to him, and whose lives are often in his care, you know. So it's I think he sees them both ways, given these circumstances.
Which way would he lean if that became a test?
Good. That would probably might be subject for one of the episodes.
I was actually going to ask something sort of similar. I was kind of assuming the idea that they were kind of like your children. So is there any of them that you consider like a problem child or, I guess, favorites or whatever from a doctor or father-like standpoint?
No.
They're all equal?
Equally but different. Equally different, yeah.
My name is Zach Penn.
And you created the show?
I did. I co-created the show with Michael Karnow, a friend of mine.
You want to talk just briefly about the genesis?
Sure. Michael and I were working on a movie together, a movie called The Grand, an improvisational comedy that I directed, and he came to me with this idea that, you know, he had done all this research about MKUltra and these other government programs to look into people with extraordinary abilities, with psychics and stuff like that, which, of course, being the real world, all ended in kind of hilarious disaster. And his idea was, what if it had worked? What if they had found a group of people who actually could do extraordinary things and turn them into kind of a unit? And I had always been really interested in Oliver Sacks and studies of the mind and, you know, kind of extraordinary examples of the limits of the human brain. And we kind of smashed those two things together and came up with this idea and went out and pitched it. And, you know, there's a whole other saga. You know, we were originally at ABC, but we ended up at Sci-Fi, and here we are. You know, it's now 5 years later, and we're on the air.
So, a phenomenal debut.
Thank you.
How does the show change, though, when you think it's going to be at ABC? I'd imagine the scope of it is going to be one way, and then when it comes to Sci-Fi, it's got to cut down.
Well, you know, ironically, the scope actually hasn't really changed. In fact, at ABC, we were getting more resistance to the science fiction, believe it or not.
We were
in these meetings, and they would say, you know, a little bit less science fiction. And I was like, that's going to be hard to get around. It's a science fiction show. So obviously, when we went to Sci-Fi, they didn't say, less science fiction, please. So that made it a lot easier. Frankly, I mean, the scope, I actually think we ended up, it's not as different as you might think, because one of the things we've tried to avoid is, having worked on a lot of the big Marvel movies and a lot of big blockbuster movies, I don't want to be in competition with them. I think it's a mistake for people to make TV shows that are trying to compete on the level of spectacle. It's a losing proposition. And so from this outset, our goal was to create a show that did not require, you know, a new Golden Gate Bridge to tear out of its moorings and send across the bay, if you will. So the show was designed to be more about a group of people who work in an office park or in a strip mall and have to do this work for the government and have all these problems and have these abilities, but that's the core of the show. And then going out and maybe finding other alphas or doing things for the government is kind of the icing on the cake. So I guess that stayed fairly weirdly consistent through through two different networks in many years.
I had a question about the origin of the alphas. I wasn't quite clear. The origin of the alphas, because we just now noticed that they exist, or was there something that happened that now all of a sudden they exist?
That is a very good question that will come up. I mean, I can't tell you the full answer because it would ruin the show for you, but I will tell you, the question of how this all started, I mean, here's what I can tell you. I can tell you that Rosen was the first person to really put together that all these different people with these different abilities are somehow connected. There's some sort of neurological connection, at least in his mind, between all of them, and that's what he's been working on. And that comes out even in Cause and Effect, I believe, in the second episode. So he's always seen some sort of connection. He's formulating his own theory. What that theory is and how they are all connected is something he hasn't told anyone yet, and he kind of keeps locked away. And I will keep locked away from you for now.
is the choice between you either work with Rosen or you're in prison, are those your only two options?
No, and I certainly don't think Rosen wants that to be your only choice, and you'll see there's a number of episodes coming up where we meet people who are alphas, who don't have some crazy ability, they're not heroes or villains, they're just people who can do something special, who neither work for Rosen nor for Red Flag nor, you know, whatever. They're in the wind, as we would say. That said, the pressure is going to get turned up as the season goes on. The government is putting more and more pressure on Rosen to say, hey, look, these people are an asset or they're a danger, one or the other. And there's people on the other side of the aisle saying, wait a second, don't tell us, you know, why do I lose my rights because I can see signals in the air? I shouldn't, you know. So all those issues will come into play over the course of the season. And the question of the origin of how this all started and where it began and who really does know about it and who doesn't know about it will come out in the course of the season. But, you know, I can't tell you. I can't give you a spoiler or they'll shoot me.
Are the alphas limited to one ability or can they develop multiple abilities?
That's a very good question. Also, and you... First of all, a number of our characters will develop, they'll realize that their ability has more than one application. I mean, you've seen a little of that already with Hicks, but you will see that, you know, in other ways as we go on. The question of, I mean, it's all got to be rooted in brain chemistry. That's our one role. Like, if we can't explain it with some sort of brain chemistry explanation, then it doesn't really belong in our show. So we always come back to that. But yes, you will meet people who perhaps have developed more than one alpha ability.
Are they trying to cultivate that, maybe?
They might be.
Or you're going to be one of those interview subjects, are you?
No, I mean, I'm just saying, I don't want to give away, you know, what happens in the episode. You're asking pointed questions, but I don't want to tell you where it's all going. You know, otherwise, it'd be boring.
What would be the decision to add a character who has special needs? I think that's awesome.
Oh, well, thank you. And that was actually one of the earliest ideas, and it came right out of reading a lot of Oliver Sacks that, you know, often, I mean, look, when you do research on savants, on people who have some of the extraordinary, I mean, there's a guy named Daniel Tammet who was someone we looked at when we were first conceiving Gary. Those people, you know, those savants come, it comes with a price. I mean, there's a guy who can, you know, they flew him over Rome for 45 minutes and he painted a absolutely accurate diorama of all of Rome down to the windows, you know, over the course of 2 days. But he's also mentally, you know, he's handicapped in a lot of ways. So it just felt we had to do that. One of the characters had to be that way. And by the way, you will see in 9 days, more on that subject, a lot more, or however many days it is till episode 104.
Are you staying on the show? I mean, are you on the show?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I gotta. They gotta keep me working all day.
So, what attracted you the most to Alphas?
Well, I can answer that in two ways. One was I had taken a year off. To finish a novel that I had started during the writer's strike and then put down when I went back to work. But then my wife had hip surgery, so I took some time off to work on it some more. And then I said, "Honey, I'm not working for a year until I finish the book." So by the time that was done, I was ready to go anywhere and do anything. And my wife wanted me gone so badly; she was so, because I would spend days not getting dressed, just in a ratty bathrobe, sitting at the computer in beautiful summer days, and I never went outside. And it was not pleasant to be around. There was a smell that was not pleasant. So that was, you know, so I was ready to jump at anything at that point. But what happened was I saw the pilot, and I saw some potential in it. I also was a fan of Zach's movie, Incident at Loch Ness, his comedy with Werner Herzog about the Loch Ness Monster. I hadn't seen the X-Men movies. I knew Zach from Incident at Loch Ness. So I knew he was into, you know, humor, character humor, improv humor. And you know, I saw some of it in the pilot, and I knew that it had been a long and arduous process to get the pilot done, and I know it went through many, many iterations over the years, and I think a lot of stuff that they had wanted to do didn't quite get in the pilot at times, you know. I think the story kind of overwhelmed the character stuff in a way, but I know that's what they wanted to do, and that's what I was interested in doing, and that's why I did it. Because they said, yeah, we want to do the pilot, but we want to do more. I said, well, I can get you to do more. We'll get more done, so that's why.
Sorry. Is there a seasonal arc to this show? I mean, it kind of seems like a standalone, but I do feel like there is a bigger story happening in the background. So is there a definite seasonal arc, or at least a seasonal arc, I mean?
Well, yeah. I mean, I just don't buy into people. Maybe they're telling the truth. That they say, I know what the show is going to be 5 years down the line. Because if you know what the show is going to be like 5 years down the line, then you're with a dead show, because the show will change, the characters will change. You might think you know, but by the time you get there, it better have changed. Because that means your show is alive, and the show is running you, which is the way, you know, and the characters are running you. But that being said, yes, you know, the rule from on high is it has to be standalone episodes. None of this serialization shit, or they'll, you know, that's a no-no now. But within that, you can serialize the characters, and the you know, the case of the week or the story of the week has to be resolved, but everything around it doesn't have to be resolved. So that's serialized. So yes, we kind of knew where we wanted to go, you know, and plus other things we thought we wanted to do. And then when you get there, you go, you know, guys, this is like, we've done 11 episodes of this thing. We can't get there yet. We haven't earned that. You know, you want to make these big moves in your head, you know, because you think it sounds really cool when you're thinking about it. But when you get there, you're going, man, it's like the beginning of the beginning. It's 11 episodes of season one. We're not, you can't take that character and, you know, just jump them so many steps. So we took it down a bit in terms of like those big mythology moves, while still maintaining, you know, some game changers that we had thought we'd do. So yeah. We haven't written it yet. That's why I'm being so hesitant, because I don't want to say anything and then something will change, or that, you know. But yeah, I think I'm hopeful that this show will be able to evolve season by season. You know, that would be good.
How would you differentiate your show from other shows about characters with superpowers?
Well, with the exception of the one I worked on, which was the 4400, I didn't watch any of them. So I'm in the you know, the nice position of not worrying about, you know, Heroes or Lost or Fringe or No Ordinary Family or Cape, because I never saw an episode of any of them. So which is good. I mean, that's why I don't usually watch that kind of stuff, because I don't want it getting into my brain and keeping me from doing things. Because the characters are different, you know. The bottom line is, the characters on Alphas are different from all those other characters, just like the characters from those shows are different from us and all those other shows. So, you know, if execution is everything, which we know it is, because you could do 100 frickin' westerns and they're all the same, the outlaws are being chased by the posse and the guy loves the girl and he loves his horse or whatever, and suddenly someone makes a western and you go, fuck, that's art, that's beautiful. You know, it's all in the execution. They were playing with the same things, the same elements, but someone does something really cool with them and everyone else kind of does what's expected. It's fun and entertaining, but someone does something special. So, you know, it's all in the execution, and what is the execution is the characters, and our characters have to live and die with what we do with them and what the actors bring to them and how the directors shoot them and how the editors edit them, and that's all that matters. So, not really worried.
Which
which character or element in the storyline is the hardest thing to bring from script to screen?
Well,
you start out with concepts. Which one was the most difficult?
Well, I think the thing that was probably the most difficult is that the character of Nina was conceived to be this one thing, this kind of, you know, wild child, you know, sleep with whoever she wants to sleep with, take whatever she wants to take, you know, have a real kind of saucy attitude. And then they cast the sweetest, nicest woman on the entire planet, Laura Manel, and she doesn't quite, that's not her thing. And that's cool, because I've been on lots of shows where you know, the character is supposed to be one thing, then you hire an actor and you go, oh, well, that's who that character is. The character is that actor. We had to come to that conclusion ourselves, you know, and once we got that, suddenly everything clicked into place. And it's not that she doesn't have the wild child background and stuff, but you know, she just, all I could say is she evolved into a more interesting character. So that to me, everyone else kind of, like Bill Harkin's character that Malik plays, you know, Malik brings so much more to that character. You know, I mean, God, that character from the pilot to where he goes over the course of the season, night and day, how that...
So you're saying he becomes a teddy bear?
Wow. That's how Wild Bill Hickok got fucking dead. Some guy sitting at a table walked up right behind him, because the one time in his life he did not sit with his back to the wall. Bang, zoom.
All done. Well, hopefully it turns out better for you.
Finally, after all these years.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot, guys.